Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Though the mountains be shaken and hills be removed, yet my unfailing love for you will not be shaken, nor my covenant of peace be removed, says the Lord, who has compassion on you. That is Isaiah 54:10. Well, the mountains certainly do seem to be shaking these days during this unsteady time of COVID-19, especially for parents, and in particular, those of us parents who have fostered or adopted children. Many of our kids are struggling, parents are struggling, and we want to bring you some peace and some encouragement today and remind you that God's unfailing love for you will not be shaken and his peace will not be removed, even in the midst of a pandemic and the resulting fallout from it. I am Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining us today for episode 223 of Orphans No More. I am here in upstate New York, where phase one of reopening and hopefully soon phase two is underway. And I hope so, because I need to get this hair done. If I know you might not be seeing this through video, but my hair is sort of poof. So I really could use some trimming going on here. But things are slowly starting to feel a bit more normal, but I'm not sure we will ever have our old normal back. Kind of reminds me of life after we adopt, right? Before we welcome our guest, I'd like to share with you that our Justice for Orphans spring newsletter is available online. You can read about the work of this ministry and learn more about us by going to justicefororphansny.org and click on newsletter at the top of the homepage. It'll be right there, take you right to it. So I hope that you will check that out. Now to our amazing guest. Melissa Corkum is a transracial adoptee and a transracial adoptive mom. She's also an Empowered to Connect parent trainer and co-host of the Adoption Connection podcast. Please welcome to the show, Melissa Corkum. Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Sandra. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you. I can't wait to have our conversation. And I know our listeners may be familiar with last week's episode where we chatted with Lisa Qualls, and the two of you co-host that Adoption Connection podcast together. And when we all made our schedules, we didn't even realize that we were kind of all overlapping and connecting. So love how God does that. So I'm thrilled to have you on as a guest this week. So I can't wait for my listeners to hear your story. So I'd like to start at the very beginning, and typically when I ask an adoptive or foster parent to share their adoption story, they start with adopting their children, but you yourself were adopted. So share your story with us.
Sure. So I was adopted from Korea. I was between 3 and 4 months old when I came home. And, you know, back then they actually just put us on airplanes and sent us over to the States. So my parents, until we adopted, had never traveled to Korea. I have two siblings who are also adopted from Korea. We're not biologically related, and we kind of came home as stair steps. It was about 2 years between each of us. And so our journey with adoption, you know, started a long, long time ago. And I actually have two cousins in my generation who are also adopted. So this has really been a part of our extended family story for a long time.
Wow. That is amazing. And so now as an adult adoptee, you've walked this journey as an adoptee. What would you tell parents on, you know, what do you wish adoptive parents knew about adoptees?
So I think the message that I'm really passionate about right now is encouraging parents to follow their kids' lead. There are a lot of loud voices in the adoptee world right now, and a lot of them are kind of seeking, maybe justice is the word, or recognition, validation for a lot of really big feelings of grief and hurt and abandonment. And they're all super valid. And we have definitely had adoptees in our family, both my children, cousins, friends. I actually also grew up on a block with 7 Korean adopted kids total across 3 families. So, you know, I've had the privilege of really watching a lot of adoptees process their story. But I also think that there's kind of this population of adoptees out there who have processed it in a different way. Maybe they are more future focused and they've come to terms with, they've accepted, you know, what their story is, and they're more interested in moving forward. And that's also a valid way to process your story. But I find that a lot of those adoptees don't feel the same need to have their voice heard in the adoptive family conversation or the adoption triad or constellation conversation. They don't even know really that there's a conversation even to be had. So I always encourage parents to just not project necessarily feelings onto their kids. I've heard a lot of adoptees say things like, well, all adoptees are wondering about their birth moms. Well, I haven't had that experience, and I know a couple other adoptees who haven't had that experience, but it is a very valid experience. So I think having questions that are more curious, like, I'm curious if you ever wonder about your birth mom, or I'm curious about, you know, how you feel about celebrating your adoption day or your birthday, and just letting either answer be totally okay.
Yeah, I've seen what you're saying. I have 5 adopted children, and they all process differently. And 4 of them are siblings. They're biological siblings. But even within that group of 4 kids, they're all at different places and process that their story differently. And it's okay.
Yeah. And I think even when I started hearing the narrative of adoptees that had these really big feelings of grief and loss and abandonment, and adoptees saying with confidence, all adoptees, your children are feeling this. As an adoptee, I almost felt like guilty, like, oh gosh, like, do I have like some suppressed feelings, or am I a terrible person because I don't think about my birth mom? Or like it almost invalidated my own experience. And so like I said, I don't think that one is better or not. And I don't want to invalidate the experience of those who are really struggling. But again, follow your kids' lead.
Yeah, for sure. Wonderful advice. So you and your husband are parents to 6 kids, ages 13 to 22. Plus you've got a grandbaby thrown in there, like me. So we love those little ones. But 4 of your children came through adoption. So what led you to adopt?
So it's kind of a funny story. When I first met my husband, and we're talking like first or second date, he looked at me and he said, I would really love to be married by like 25 with a couple kids. And so if at any point in time you think you can't marry me, or you know, don't think you're going to marry me, like, we can just end this. Like, I'm not here to mess around, you know? And then the second thing he said was, and also I've always wanted to adopt. And so if you're also not interested in that, then also we can be over. And at the time he didn't know I was an adoptee. And so I remember thinking, oh, well, that's interesting. And so I said to him, well, I was adopted and I think it went okay. And so I guess I can't say no. So we were a little bit unusual in the sense that it was actually his impetus. He brought it up. We were both 100% on board when we finally got to that place in our family. We had 2 kids by birth first, and really more thinking about orphan care ministry, like exactly kind of what you're doing with Justice for Orphans. And somehow God led us to this waiting list of kids from Korea, and we got curious. And before we knew it, we had a referral, and we traveled 365 days, like to the day after first seeing his picture. And it was a whirlwind. And, you know, I kind of say like you can adopt by accident. Like, we didn't set out to really do it. And we didn't even have a home study when they sent his referral. I mean, there are so many like wonky things that now that I know more about the adoption world, I'm like, man, that was unusual.
Yeah. Incredible. So with 4 adopted children, I'm sure you've encountered behaviors triggered by trauma. And I know you're an Empowered to Connect parent trainer, so obviously you've walked this journey and needed those tools. So what was that experience like in your family with your children?
Well, we started off thinking that we had it all together. We had our 3 and 5 year old. We really thought we were great parents, and we were just doing the things I think that we had grown up with, you know, consequences, logical parenting, and it was working. And we kind of blew through adoption training because it was mostly about transracial issues, and our son wasn't going to have some of the same issues that kids where they're the only person of color in their family. You know, we had obviously he was going to look a lot like me, and he had an aunt and an uncle, and my sister was married to a Black guy at the time. I mean, there was just a lot of color in our family already. So that didn't feel like it was going to be too big. And, you know, my best friend's a Korean adoptee. It just didn't feel like that was going to be a big hurdle. And then there was a lot of talk around institutions. And in Korea, most of the kids who are in the adoption pipeline are in foster families. And our son was in a foster family. And so we also kind of blew through that. And we thought, oh, well, no institutional behavior here. And this will just be great. It'll just be like parenting another child. He came home at 2. We thought young enough to still form an attachment. And we just knew nothing of trauma. And, you know, looking at Dr. Purvis's list of, you know, risk factors for kids from hard places, he checks off pretty much every single one. And so he was really the impetus. We brought him home and were humbled very quickly when we realized that nothing was working the way that we expected it to work. And I dusted off my copy of The Connected Child, which I had kind of put away. I'm naturally a little bit more high structure, right? And so I read The Connected Child and I thought that's too wishy-washy for us, and put it on the shelf. And so out of desperation, I pulled it out, and we're kind of all in people, go big or go home. So we kind of dipped our toe in the water, and things were different. He didn't respond the same way, right? Mm-hmm. When we were a little bit kinder, when we offered compromises and gave voice. And so I dragged my husband all the way to Texas, and we got trained as Empowered to Connect parent trainers. And he really had no idea what he was getting himself into. He's now fully on board, and it just informs so much of how we view relationship, not just as parents, but as employers and coaches and children and friends and so many things. So I find it a huge blessing that we discovered kind of this world of understanding these needs behind the behaviors.
Yeah. So your first son was adopted from Korea. What about your other 3 children?
So when we were in Texas in 2012, becoming Empowered to Connect trainers, we were in the process of turning in a dossier to Ethiopia. And when we turned in that paperwork, we thought, well, we tried toddler adoption, and that wasn't necessarily easy. That didn't really go the way we thought it would. And we knew that we didn't want to kind of, I guess, be in competition for infant adoption. We just knew that we had really healthy infants and already been through that. And we also were in high school ministry at the time, and really just had a big heart for older kids, but really wanted to just be used. You know, we had all this training now and room in our car and our home and all of these things. And so we told our agency that we would take up to 3 children. We were looking to help a sibling group, and that the age and gender didn't matter. And so we ended up, it's kind of a long story, but the long story short is that we ended up with 3 older kids from Ethiopia, all unrelated, different orphanages. They were 11, 13, and 14 when they came home, and they came home towards the end of 2012.
Wow. And how was that? Because you're talking older kids in an entirely different country, Ethiopia. Were they institutionalized?
Yeah, they had experience in institution. They had, all of them had, you know, different histories that brought them to the adoption process. English was a thing, and we were out of birth order. So the youngest of our Ethiopian children is still 2 years older than our oldest child by birth. And so how was it? It was a madhouse. It was chaos. And we just realized that there was still a big gap between kind of the theory and all the things that we knew as Empowered to Connect trainers. And we did a lot of things right, but we did a lot of things wrong. And we learned so much trial by fire. And it was hard. It was hard to juggle everybody's needs. We grossly underestimated just how our own personalities would respond with such complex stress and kind of ongoing stress, and how it would impact our other kids. You know, our youngest, Ty, was more or less fairly stable by then. But this really kind of rocked his world. Mm-hmm. And then our two kids by birth, who are fairly neurotypical and they weren't the squeaky wheel, they really kind of got lost in the shuffle because they weren't the needy ones. They didn't need as much attention. So there's so many things that we would do differently if we had to do this again, but really have learned so much. And so that process, I think, was also important to bringing us to where we are now.
Yeah, God definitely uses that, our mistakes in the process and our victories as we learn those new tools and apply them. I've said the same thing. We made a lot of mistakes and I would definitely do things differently with the tools that we now have. But with even our adult children that have been adopted, we're still applying some of those principles. And I'm speaking of Dr. Purvis's TBRI principles, the saying yes and those kinds of things. They work even when you have adult children and they're not even living home anymore. You can rebuild that relationship using some of those tools. We found that, which was very encouraging along the way when you feel like you just blew it, but then you kind of get a redo, and that's encouraging.
Yeah, we did have kind of an ultimate family redo. By 2015, kind of everything had exploded with all of our kids. And we had another business venture that was a kind of a social enterprise. And we had also had another young man living with us who had aged out of the foster care system. So we were just kind of a hot mess as a family. And we did, we were fighting all of the wrong battles. And two of our kids had the opportunity to go to Job Corps, and they were 16 and 17 at the time. And they kind of said, we're finished. You know, like this isn't what we signed up for when we thought we wanted to be in a family, you know, because they came to family much older and we really thought we had blown it. You know, we thought this relationship might really be over, and God was super gracious. And we had a fantastic trauma-informed therapist that really allowed us to kind of rethink what we were doing, rethink what our definitions of success were. And we were able to rebuild relationship with them. And for one of them, it took years, not months. And really, you know, we had to kind of rebuild that attachment and trust all over again. So I am super grateful for the opportunity to have learned a lesson through what we did and had a chance to redeem and kind of come full circle with our kids. And then the three younger kids coming up behind them, they are reaping the benefits of our learned lessons, I hope.
Yeah, I hear you. I can aim in that because I've seen that here in our family too. Melissa, you talk about something called blocked trust and blocked care. Can you explain that for us?
Sure. So, you know, as we ventured into this therapeutic parenting world, it became very clear to us that our kids' history made them very self-protective, and that impacted attachment. And that made a lot of sense to us. And if you've done any TBRI training or Empowered to Connect, that makes a lot of sense. And so Dan Hughes coins that blocked trust, that their nervous system had these experiences. And because of the way that we're wired to kind of, you know, for survival, that they are very wary of trust. And I mean, we see that through attachment challenges. And that all made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
The piece of the puzzle that no one had ever connected the dots for in our situation was what happens with parents who were kind of in this parallel journey of complex stress and trauma, where we are extending ourselves in relationship to kids who have blocked trust. And what happens is that relationship isn't reciprocated the way that kind of typical healthy relationships are. And no one connected the dots for me that that in itself would trigger something in my nervous system that would say, oh, that pattern doesn't feel great. I'm going to protect myself. And so as a caregiver perspective, we can develop something called blocked care. And it's subconscious. It's not our choice. But the signs of blocked care include things like apathy towards, you know, our kids, these feelings of wanting to give up, you know, kind of we're going through the motions of parenting, but our heart really isn't there. Yeah. And that can cycle with feelings of shame and guilt that we feel like we want to give up, but yet we have these voices of, you know, unconditional love and this is your calling and God put these kids in your life. And there's a lot of, you know, things that don't quite connect there. And I didn't have words and I didn't have permission when we were in our hardest time to understand why it was so hard to just keep caring, so hard to keep my heart in it, so hard to come back every day and extend compassion and implement the principles of TBRI, of giving yeses and all these things. Like I wanted to say no.
Yeah,
you know, like that's what I feel in my spirit.
Yes, I totally, with our first adopted daughter, and we didn't enter this world of, oh, we're going to adopt. She was a relative. We welcomed her into our home. We're going to treat her like one of our own and we're all going to live happily ever after. But happily ever after didn't happen initially. And this was back in 1999, early 2000. You know, we didn't know anything about trauma, or I don't think I would have even gone after reading adoption books at the time because that's not really, was not on our radar. But our daughter had experienced significant trauma by the time she came into our home at 9 years old. And that was really what was driving her behaviors. But those behaviors were getting in the way of, you know, that reciprocating relationship that you're talking about. And I found myself saying no to a lot of things over the years that I really didn't need to say no to. I just didn't feel like saying yes. So I can totally relate to what you're saying.
Yeah. And if you've never experienced it, right. And when I would reflect on it, I would think you're such a bad person. You're such a terrible mom. Like, why couldn't you just say yes to that?
Right. Right. Exactly. Like there's no real reason why other than I don't feel like it. I don't feel like, and you know, we can't go by our feelings. We need to go by, you know, what we know is best for that child, but it is a hard place to navigate as a parent when you want to, you know, you want to love this child, but there's, you know, you kind of feel like they're unlovable at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that is, now I know you have something called the Compassion Challenge, and it's on the website for the Adoption Connection podcast, and it's related to this blocked care. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So Lisa, who you had on the podcast recently, and I got together and we have walked similar experiences, and we just wanted to create a resource that was what we wish we would have had, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. And a piece of that has been helping parents have awareness around this blocked trust and blocked care so that they don't feel guilty. They don't feel shame, because when we're caught in that shame and guilt, it really paralyzes us for moving forward. And so we created a free training called the Compassion Challenge, and it's for the discouraged adoptive mom and or parent, really. It's for either, but we find that, you know, moms are kind of taking a lot of the brunt of some of these things. And so, you know, your listeners, we want to offer that to them if they're feeling like they're just at the end of their rope. And so they can grab that at theadoptionconnection.com/orphansnomore.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you. And we'll make sure we put links to that into your other resources in your other sites, the podcast and your website, in the show notes for this show and the relating blog post that goes with it. So our listeners can check that out. Speaking of at the end of your rope, at the end of our rope, during this crazy, you know, time of COVID-19, Melissa, how do you see this whole shutdown, how do you see it affecting kids, especially kids with trauma histories?
Well, I think, so our nervous systems are interesting in how they catalog and process stresses and trauma. And I think this whole shutdown is triggering a lot of kind of nonverbal feelings and memories that our kids might have that they might not even be able to put a finger on, but the nervous system is processing them and categorizing them kind of all together. So I think we may see some regression in kids. Also, our nervous systems are constantly talking to each other, even when we're not talking. And so even our own, how we are as parents is affecting how our kids are. Robin Goebel shared on our podcast once that for every 50 extrinsic pieces of information that we're passing back and forth. So those are the things that are more concrete. You know, if I say to you, hi, good morning, Sandra, it's great to see you. But with that comes, with every 50 of those comes 11 billion bits of nonverbal intrinsic information. And so I might be saying, hey, Johnny, it's all okay. You know, today's going to be a great day, but my nervous system, you know, billions of times over that, louder than that, may be expressing my own anxiety about, you know, the just state of the world. And even if I am not even conscious of it, I think we're all feeling it a little bit. And so I think that's making everybody a little bit more fragile, a little bit more quick to what we call flip our lids, right? Go to that survival part of the brain where logic, you know, doesn't have a fair chance to play in. And I think we're just all a little extra edgy and tired, which just is kind of this perfect soup for a lot to handle.
Yeah. And I think even the homeschooling, you know, for families that weren't previously homeschooling, all of a sudden to find themselves having to do that. And for many foster and adoptive parents, their children have a lot of educational needs. They probably have IEPs at school. So homeschooling them is even more of a challenge because they have learning challenges. I know that's the case in my house with my boys. And we homeschooled many years ago for about 16 years. Our youngest two, who are 14 and 16, have been in school for the past 3 years because we found that's exactly, they needed that structure. They needed that social, guided social interactions. They needed all the special education aspects with occupational therapy and speech therapy and those kinds of things. And then, so that was working. They just had blossomed and were doing phenomenally well. And then now we're all home again. And not only are we all home again, you know, I with working from home and my work with our ministry had increased. So now I'm trying to juggle both of those. So I have stresses and I'm trying to put on that smile in the morning, like everything's going to be okay. And like what you're saying, probably everything about me was sending the opposite message. And my youngest can pick up on any kind of stress. Even if before COVID-19, if we were heading somewhere to a doctor's appointment and we were running a few minutes late and, you know, and I'm like, we're late, get in the car. That would just send him totally off the edge. He needed to know everything was okay and he needed to feel secure. And I had to learn to manage my own feelings so that he wouldn't flip his lid. And now here we are home in this, you know, nobody knew, especially early on, because here we are 11 weeks in, nobody knew early on how long that this was going to last and that it was going to be okay. And I found that he was having a lot of stress. And I've talked with a lot of moms who they're saying, you know, there's been a lot of regression. This whole thing kind of triggered. And I started thinking about, you know, that abrupt I feel like a lot of kids, my own included, but for every kid who their school year sort of abruptly ended, they, all of the relationships with their friends, their teachers, administrators, they're not seeing them. I think it was at least 9 weeks in before my son had a call where he could see a video call where he could see his teacher again. And he hadn't seen any of his students, his classmates in all of that time. You know, for our kids who came out of an institution, it's very similar because all of a sudden there was an abrupt end. to all of those relationships and all of those children and people that they saw in the orphanage, even though we were bringing them home to a better place, there was still that abrupt end that they had no real voice in, no real control over. And now all of a sudden, it's almost the same thing. Everything came to an end. We haven't seen anybody. There was no closure. And I think that triggered some things because it had to feel to their, you know, nervous system very similar in that cutting away of relationships all of a sudden. So we've been trying to really kind of go back and connect our kids, even if it's through a video call with classmates and teachers, so that there can be some closure to this school year. But it definitely triggers some of those behaviors, especially with kids with histories like ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this case, right, there's even a very clear, like you just explained, parallel to why the nervous system would flash back to those last experiences. And Bessel van der Kolk talks about in his book, The Body Keeps the Score, right? Like those things are lodged in our bodies and in a deeper way than just our cognitive memory.
Yeah. Can you say the name of that book again? Because I don't think I've heard of that one. It sounds good.
It is. It's a little bit technical. So it might need a multiple read over, but it's called The Body Keeps the Score.
Wow. Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So Melissa, how would you say parents could help their kids navigate this fear and stress from, you know, this unknown, we don't know how this is going to play out. It's a very uncertain season that we're all in.
Well, I think it's important to know that our kids have something called neuroception, and that's their scanner, subconscious scanner in their brain that's telling them, am I safe or am I not safe? And there are some really concrete ways that we can help. The first thing is we've already talked about our own regulation, because at the end of the day, we can't control our kids and we can't force them to breathe with us. We can't force them to do a lot of the things that are going to help regulate the nervous system, but we can do them for ourselves. And don't underestimate the power of mirror neurons and how your nervous system can lead your children to a state of being that is less hyped up and more regulated. I think being honest, because our kids, again, are sensing a lot of our nonverbal cues. So don't tell them that everything's going to be okay if you're not really sure. You know, limit their exposure to media, but be honest with what's going on in factual, age-appropriate ways. Give them time to process. Our kids also process the world much more slowly than the world moves. So, you know, less words, just in general about the pandemic or otherwise. You know, if we're making requests of them, visuals plus verbal requests are going to be better. You know, validating their experience, understanding the grief process a little bit. You know, you can just even Google the stages of grief, but understanding that this is registering kind of like a loss, and we're losing not just people, but we're losing experiences. Like my daughter's a dancer, and so she's really grieving the loss of a performance, the loss of a year, you know, expectations and dreams of what the spring and summer were going to hold, and now they're not. We just found out her favorite sleepover summer camp is officially canceled, right? And so giving our kids space to have all those big feelings and help them, you know, navigate that without dismissing them.
Yeah, that's important, because I know, you know, my son at one point, we were just going to go for a ride in the car to just get out of the house at one point a few weeks ago. And he was like, no, I'm not going because I could die of COVID-19. And I'm like, at first my thought was, well, you're not going to die. We're not even going to get out of the car. But then I realized he's verbalizing what he's feeling. We need to talk about that. He's entitled to that feeling. And I can't just say, oh, that's not going to happen and kind of brush it off. He's feeling that, because there was a time early on in when we first adopted him that he couldn't really express his feelings. And now he's got a voice and he can express his feelings. So I need to take those feelings seriously. And that was a real fear that he had. You know, we were careful to not keep the news on, you know, around him. We didn't have the TV on all during the day. It only came on in the evening, but we had to make sure that even our conversations, I couldn't go to the grocery store early on and come home and flip out because there was no meat and there was no toilet paper, because then that made him panic. So I had to self-regulate, but also I had to validate his feelings. And I totally agree with the, you know, really addressing the loss, because every kid, whether they're an adopted child or a foster child, every kid is experiencing loss. So many, you know, high school seniors lost their senior year, their graduation ceremony, proms for our juniors. There are so many things. My son too has lost his summer program. It was just a day program, but it was so crucial to his development in building friendships and whatnot. And now that's gone. So, you know, when he can sit and say, you know, I'm not happy because I can't go to my camp, you know, we sit and say, we're not happy either. You know, we're so sorry that, you know, we're going to try to connect you with your friends in some way. So we need to understand that this is loss and allow them to grieve and regulate our own feelings in that. So I love what you're saying. That's such good advice. Now, what about as parents for ourselves, and we touched on this a little bit, how can we take care of ourselves during this time? Now, we know we do need to regulate ourselves, but what are some ways we can care for ourselves so that we're in better emotional shape to care for our kids?
I love this topic, because when I work with parents, this is actually where we start, because we're often too exhausted and too burnt out and too discouraged to even hear or be receptive of a new idea or a new parenting strategy if our tank is so very, very empty. So I think this also is very individual, because each of our families is different and the needs of our kids are so different. You know, we still have a teenager who needs to be watched like a toddler, you know, and that's a big job. And yeah. Also by personality, we all have different needs. We have different fears, different things that motivate us. And so I often will ask the question of parents, what things energize you? And it's a little bit different for everybody. And what energizes us is not always the easy thing. So I'll give an example for me. Sometimes the easy thing feels like vegging out in front of Netflix.
Yeah.
But I also know that at the end of that, I don't always, even though it's given me a break, it's been a little bit more like escapism, and I don't really come out of 3 hours of binge watching something necessarily feeling more energized to get back in the game. Now walking is a little bit different, you know, going out and taking a walk, even just a 30-minute walk around the neighborhood, sometimes in silence, sometimes listening to a podcast, that feels like both an escape and I come back, you know, with those endorphins pumping and more energized to be a better mom and a better wife and all of those things. And so I think just taking a little bit of time to figure that out and having a menu of options that you can access pretty quickly, some things that take moments like a couple deep breaths or popping your favorite candy in your mouth to something that might be a little bit longer, 30 minutes, a 30-minute drive, you know, once upon a time, coffee with a friend, whatever that looked like. And then I tell parents, I know this sounds silly, but write them down and put them somewhere where you can see them, on your refrigerator somewhere, because when we need them, our nervous system is such that we're not really able to access that list. Mm-hmm. And so actually taking the time, writing down, you know, 10 things that you can do and putting it somewhere visual in front of you will get you one step closer. It takes away one brain task, you know, having to remember and recall those things before you can access them.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the taking a walk. I live in upstate New York. So those months where we were really shut in, March and even April. We had snow the day before Mother's Day in early May here. So it was so hard to, we had occasional nice days, but by and large, they were gloomy, cold days. And it sort of was like adding insult to injury. We're sort of locked down here, but now I can't even really feel like I want to even go outside. But now that that weather has lifted and we're having beautiful days, just being able to go outside and go for a walk and smell the sweet smell of all the flowers that are starting to come out and hear the birds tweeting and feel that warm sun. It's so rejuvenating, even a 30-minute walk in the evening after dinner. You know, I started doing some yoga in the morning before the kids get up, just so I could have 30 minutes to myself, because I found myself sitting all the time. So vegging on Netflix wasn't really something I wanted to do, because I was being so between writing and the work that I do, I'm at my computer a lot. And then we had to add the homeschooling, which was more sitting. I just felt like my body was going to be stuck in a sitting position forever. And I wanted to move. So that was something I started very early on and started feeling really good as a result of, but, listening to podcasts and just carving out that little bit of time to feel better at the end of that 30 minutes or 15 minutes, that I did going in. And I'm one that used to take care of everybody else first, and there was never any time left for me after. And it was just kind of like, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. And now it's like, I can't afford to not take the time if I'm going to be emotionally available for my kids, especially during this time, during this season. So it's so crucial. Parents have to take that time each day to do a little something to charge your batteries and get yourself back in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about it being kind of you being the stable foundation, and foundation comes first, right? You have to start with you. And I also talk about return on investment. Because our kids sometimes can feel like these black holes of need, right? They could take every hour of our day and kind of still feel like they needed more, at least some of them. You know, in 30 minutes to ourselves, to rejuvenate ourselves, our return on investment for that is way greater than what we're losing by just taking 30 minutes away from pouring into our kids.
Yeah. Absolutely. Love that. So we just want to encourage our listeners to really invest in some soul care, self-care time. Make that list, like Melissa said, a list of 10 things that you can do. And it could be just sneaking out on the porch with a cup of coffee and some solitude and listening to the birds twitter, right? Make sure you're doing something for yourself to stabilize your own foundation, to recharge your own batteries. It's so key to be able to pour back into our kids. So Melissa, as we wrap up today, anything else on your heart that you really want to make sure our listeners hear? What is their takeaway that you'd like them to take away today?
So I think we so often define our success around how our kids are doing. And I falsely assumed for a long time, once I understood, you know, the need behind the behavior and how much we could bring and invite our kids into healing, that if they weren't doing well, it was because I wasn't giving enough. Mm. And I would feel like a failure, you know, that because I thought if I had enough compassion, if I gave enough yeses, if I made enough compromises, then this would all change. And so we sign off our podcast, The Adoption Connection, by just reminding parents that they're good parents doing good work, because our kids are probably not the ones who are going to be able to tell us that in this season. And so I think it just feels good to hear that. And so if you're listening to this and you're a parent, I would just say I 100% with my whole heart believe that even just the fact that you're listening to this podcast means you are a great parent doing great work.
Yeah, it's hard work, but it's great work. And great parents. Love that. Thank you so much for that encouragement, Melissa. How can our listeners connect with you online?
So my website is thecorkboardonline.com. And so that's the best place to connect with me. There's a link to the podcast there. All my social media links are there. You know, there's some freebies there as well. And then, you know, just one more time, that compassion challenge, if what we talked about in terms of blocked care and just really being discouraged resonated with you, we would really invite you to come join us for the Compassion Challenge. And that's at theadoptionconnection.com/orphansnomore.
Well, thank you so much. And we're going to make sure to include links to all of your sites, to the corkboardonline.com. You're also on Facebook and Instagram at corkboardonline. And of course, your podcast, theadoptionconnection.com. We're going to have links to everything in the show notes for this episode and on our website at the blog post for this episode. So our listeners can definitely find you and connect with you. So we'll make sure to do that. Melissa, thank you so much for being with us today and just for serving foster and adoptive parents and encouraging us along the way. It's a hard journey, but it is so worth it.
Thank you, Sandra. It was really a pleasure being with you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, loved having you on the show. Thank you so much. And just want to thank our listeners also for checking out episode number 223 today. I hope you were inspired and encouraged by Melissa sharing with us today. I know I was. I am. And we want to hear from you. We want to know your thoughts, your feelings, and what you'd like to listen to. So send us an email or leave us a comment at justicefororphansny.org. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave us a review, tell your friends about it, and share it on your social media. We so much appreciate that. I am your host, Sandra Flack. Stay tuned to this podcast and our social media sites for updates on the release of my first book, Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. I know I talk about it a lot, but I am really writing it, and it is almost really done. And it will be in print soon. So I am looking so much forward to bringing this project to fruition, to completing it and having it out there. It's been a long journey, so stay tuned for that. And you can find and follow more episodes of Orphans No More on your favorite podcast platform. Also on our website, justicefororphansny.org. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you next time here on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.